Welcome to the Old Time Radio Daily Westerns. I'm your host, Andrew Rines, and today is June 9th, 2010. Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon.com. If you plan on doing any online shopping, first go to otrwesterns.com/Amazon to start your shopping experience today. Today's episodes of Challenge of the Yukon, the first one originally aired June 8th, 1944, and the title is Reverend Jim. The second one is from June 15th, 1944, and the title is The Man from Missouri. Now, I was looking, I don't believe, last week I actually gave you guys the history facts. I have it written down, I know exactly what it is, but for some reason I think I left it out, I'm pretty sure. Either way, June 6, 1944, was a day that most people remember. It was D-Day. 150,000 Allied Expeditionary Forces landed in Normandy, France. So, something to think about. 1944. This time in old-time radio was definitely historic. I mean, I'm looking at what, trying to figure out what we see now, and I you know, we have historical things, but nothing like that. Let's get into today's episode, and hope you guys do enjoy.
The Challenge of the Yukon. The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the Challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. It was early morning when Sergeant Preston and the two men with him sighted the Indian settlement in the distance. The strong, ice-flecked wind that had whipped against them earlier died down. But even as they approached the village, the great dog King, leading the Mountie's pack of huskies, caught the unmistakable scent of death. He knew, even before the three men saw the signs, that the village was in mourning.
What do you make of it, Sergeant? The engines seem awful quiet.
Yeah, you're right, Marsh. It does seem like something's wrong.
I think I know what it is. All right, fella. Okay, go to your huskies. See those men gathered in front of that Templar?
Yeah.
There's been a death in the tribe, Marsh. Here comes one luck. He'll tell us who it is.
Wouldn't you wonder, Stu, how the sergeant can tell one Indian from another? They all look alike to me.
Indian glad Sergeant Preston come. Chia, longtime friend Sergeant Preston, him die.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, one luck. I knew you were in mourning, but I didn't know about Chia.
We buried Chia today. You stay for burial?
Yes, of course I'll stay.
Good. You come with Wanalak now.
All right, King. Come on, fella.
We'll stay here with his head if it's all the same to you, Sergeant.
I'll be back shortly.
What do you make of that, Stu? That Injun fellow Wanalak treats the sergeant like a blood brother or something.
These tribes think a lot of that, Marty. And no wonder.
Yeah? Well, me, I like to get back where there's white men. Concerned if I want to be around whilst these redskins are burying their dead. Never saw any good come out of their powwowing around yet.
As the time drew near for the Indians to begin the burial ceremony, Marsh Ramsey was plainly uneasy. Only the comforting presence of a .45 carried in his belt sustained him. He watched the Indians bring a rude wooden coffin to where a grave had been dug. And then, as the men of the tribe stood waiting, the young Indian brave Wanalak came forward. He had a book in his hand, and from it he began to read in the language of the Indians. At intervals, the tribesmen responded in unison.
Tinikub emet fotua
Well, I'll be doggone.
What's eating you now, Marsh?
Doggone if this don't seem just like a Christian burial. Them engines sound like they're praying.
Sure.
Marsh, you look like you just seen something you can't quite believe.
That's it, all right, Sergeant. You took the words out of my mouth. I've seen a lot of engines in my time, and I've fought plenty of them, too, out in the West in the good old USA. By golly, I've never seen them heathen savages do anything like this before.
Well, the answer to that is simple. These Indians aren't heathens.
Oh, now, wait a minute. You can't...
You heard the sergeant, Marsh. What's more, there's a story behind what you just seen.
It'd have to be some story.
It is. Now, the sergeant here ain't much for going around blowing his own horn, but I happen to know a good part of that story, and I can tell it to you if he won't.
That's so?
I know what you're talking about, Stu, but King deserves a great deal of the credit.
Yeah, sure he does. But what about telling Marsh here how it happened? Unless you do, he's likely to go on till his dying day thinking he was seeing things up here. And let me tell you, Marsh, if you get a burial half as decent as the one you just seen, you can rest easy.
Well, come on over here to the longhouse, and I'll tell you about it while we're waiting for the sheep. You've heard a lot about Jim McCready since you've been in the Yukon, Marsh. But when I first met him, he was well known in a different way. Reverend Jim was a small man, I'd say about 5'2". He didn't weigh very much either. Wherever he went, trappers and prospectors towered head and shoulders over him, and their voices were usually loud enough to drown his out. Well, late one night, several years ago, King and I went into the Penguin Saloon in Cranford. It was crowded and noisy.
Hey there, Sergeant. Looking for somebody?
Oh, I just thought I'd drop in, see if I can... Well, that's Big Bill Carson over there, huh?
Yeah, he's sure having himself a time. Seems like a reverend come in a while back, trying to get some of the fellas to contribute to putting up a church.
Oh, must be Reverend Jim. And I gather Big Bill thinks it's funny.
Yeah, sure he does. Because he makes more noise than any of the gents around here, he'd probably talk him out of helping that little preacher. Let's go over.
Here, what's going to show us the error of my ways?
Oh, shut up, Bill.
What do you mean, shut up? Why, you little runner, flatten you out like a postage stamp.
Now, gentlemen, please. I had no thought to start an argument.
Good evening, Reverend Jim.
Oh, Sergeant Preston, I'm glad to see you. Indeed, I'm very glad to see you.
You see, Marsh, Big Bill Carson was the kind of man who had a genius for stirring up trouble. But it was trouble that ran under the surface. He wasn't bold enough to carry it beyond that point. But sometimes men of that type can be dangerous. Now that I look back, I can remember King watching him as Bill stood laughing at Reverend Jim. The fur on the back of King's neck bristled. Maybe it was his tone of voice, maybe it was his attitude or something he did, but whatever it was, I knew King had taken a dislike to Bill. But later that night, Reverend Jim...
I don't like to say it, but I'm afraid I'm not the right shepherd for this flock, Sergeant.
Oh, I don't know, Reverend Jim.
I'm sure of it. When I got this assignment, Bishop Hendricks told me it was a man-sized job and that it would require a great deal of faith and perseverance. I'm just not built for it. These men need someone who can be as tough as they are. To speak frankly.
They'll come around. Give them time.
I'm afraid it's a question of more than time, Sergeant. A great deal more.
Several months went by. King and I were busy on patrol duty out on the trails. There'd been many times when I'd wondered about Reverend Jim, how he was making out. I wondered, too, about Big Bill Carson. I knew Bill was up to no good. But it wasn't until later that my hunch proved to be right. King and I had stopped at Fort Munn, which is several hundred miles up the river from Cranford. We found they were having a serious food shortage there. Carson had evidently got word of it, too. He went to the Indians who'd settled outside of Cranford.
Keith, you and me have been dealing at the trading post for a long time.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's like I told you. You've been overcharged for everything you ever bought there. Now, just because you're Indians, there's no reason why it should cost you more to buy your supplies. You got a right to clean off them shelves at the post to even up the score.
Yeah, me call council. talk too brave.
Clean off the shelves, I say, and show them cheating traders no mercy.
Me go talk too many tribes.
See, Lefty, what'd I tell you? These Indians are just like putty in your hands if you know how to handle them.
Yeah, but Bill, what if they get up on the warpath and kill the traders? That's murder. And the Mounties will be on our necks for it.
They won't be on our necks. The Indians will get the blame for it. Once they get the supplies out of the boat, they'll probably start a celebration. Then we'll load what supplies we can on the boat, take them up to Fort Munn, we'll get any price we ask for them. Come on.
We were just a few miles from Cranford. We'd taken one of the back trails to save time when we met Reverend.
The townspeople have just discovered what happened, Sergeant, and they're going to start after the Indians, and I'm afraid there's going to be bloodshed. I was heading for the Indian village to try to
Maybe
tell
we can
them.
Head the party off along the trail, Reverend Jim. All right, boy.
On King! On you, Reverend King!
King was ahead of us, breaking a trail through the timber for my sled and Reverend Jim's. We were about to come out into a clearing. King had reached it a minute or so before we did. The Indians were just crossing it, but King ignored them and looked instead to a rock formation. He stood for a moment sniffing the air. Then he turned to the right, circling. He covered the ground so quickly his paws seemed to barely touch the snow.
Sergeant, where did your dog go?
I don't know, Reverend Jim. We'll be out of this timber in a minute. Then we'll deal with the Indians.
On you, Husky! Oh,
look, there's King on top of one of those rocks over there.
I looked over toward the rocks, and as I did, I saw the barrel of a rifle glitter for a moment. I realized that Reverend Jim and I were the targets. And before I could reach for my gun, I saw King jump. Well, the shot went wild. Reverend Jim and I had both been saved by King.
Well, who was doing the shooting?
It was Big Bill Carson, Marsh. A short time later, the Indians stood around, and Bill was under arrest for attempted murder. Supplies were saved and could be sent to Fort Munn. Fortunately, the traitors hadn't been killed.
And that was about the time me and the men from Cranford got there. With Sergeant Preston to act as referee, we got the Indians straightened out on who was cheating who. And Bill, without his guns, was standing there with his hands at his sides. But he was still loud-mouthed as ever.
So it took a Mountie and a preacher to break up my plans, huh?
You know, Sergeant, I'm beginning to see something I never thought of before. These Indians, they need a shepherd as much as the white men.
You're right, Reverend Jim.
Seems like you ain't learned yet, Reverend, that what you need to get along in this country is more than just a good book.
I've always thought the good book was sufficient, Brother Carson. But what else do you have in mind?
A fighting pair of fists, and you ain't got them.
That sounds like a challenge.
Call it what you like. I still say it takes a man to get along up here.
I'm sorry to do this, Brother Carson. And you understand, I bear you no enmity. But would you like to prove that point? Sergeant, with your permission.
Well,
what's the matter, Marty? I ain't gonna run away. But you'll have to carry the Reverend back to town.
All right, Brother Carson. I'm ready.
No! Terribly sorry, Brother Carson. I didn't mean to hit you so hard.
Hmm. He's out cold, Reverend Jim.
Is that so? Well, you know, I never hit a man in my life. I've never been a fighting person. I suppose it's the air up here, Sergeant, and living outdoors. Oh, here, Brother Carson, let me help you.
What do you know? I'll bet them Indians had a lot of respect for the Reverend after that.
They did, Marsh. I never saw him raise his fist to fight after that. But the knowledge that he could must have pleased him. He worked with the Indians for several years, learned their language,
and had the church service printed in it for them.
Then that must have been a church service that Indian read at the burial this morning.
Why, sure it was. And you know, when his bishop heard about what a fine job Reverend Jim did here in the Yukon, he sent for him. Yes, sir. Reverend Jim went back to England. And he's a bishop himself now. I'll bet he tells that story often, eh, Sergeant?
Yes, I guess he does it that, too. And thanks to King here, Reverend Jim and I live to tell the story.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit, and all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They are sent to you each week at the same time. Jack McCarthy speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
The challenge of the Yukon. Our king, Manu Husky! The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. Two men walked into the long, narrow frame building that served as a bank in Morriston. They walked one after the other, and before he closed the door behind him, the second man looked back to the warmly dressed lookout standing by the sleds. They exchanged nods, and apparently satisfied, the men closed the door.
Looks like you're about ready to close up.
Oh, yes, that's right, we are. You just made it in time. Say, I don't think I've ever seen you before. Going to open an account here?
No.
Oh, then you have one. Funny, I never forget a face. I never would have thought that... What's the name?
We're wasting time, boss. Let's get the dust and get out of here.
What did you say the name was?
I didn't. Drop that book, mister, and read.
Yes, who? What did...
Now you can walk over and open that safe.
Oh, but
you
I...
heard me get moving.
Yes, sir.
Duke, you go over and get what dust in the cash drawer.
Sure, boss.
Quit stalling. Spin that combination.
I'm a little bit nervous. Maybe I'd better...
Stay where you are. Lift that paper, money, and the gold out of there.
Got what dust is out in the drawer, Chan.
Good. Now load all this in the sack.
There. That's all that was in the safe.
Let me see. Yeah, you're right. Well, you've been mighty obliging for a money count.
No, wait. You're not going to... No, please.
That number you got for faces ain't going to do us any good. You ready, Duke?
I got it all, Chan. Except those pokes.
All right, then take these pokes and go on out to the sled.
Yes.
I'll be right with you.
Listen, I'll forget I even seen you. A lot of people come in and out of here.
I never take any chance.
No, wait a minute, please. I don't.
A week passed, and then, in the early morning, at an isolated spot surrounded by birch trees, a driver halted his team of dogs. The sun glinted blindingly on the snow, and a fierce wind stabbed the man with icy intensity as he stood before the cabin.
Oh, it's you, Tech. Come on in.
Where's the boss?
Right here. Meet my friends. I bring you in early, Tech.
Charlie Sullivan saw us leave the bank in Morriston. He's on his way to half mile now to meet Sergeant Preston.
Red was on the lookout.
Well, he slipped up. I was in the saloon over there when I heard about Sullivan. And if he gets to Preston Chan, your neck's as good as in a rope this minute. And the rest of us ain't much better off.
Yeah. That Mountie.
That Mountie's been out to get you a long time. You've just been lucky so far that he ain't been able to get enough evidence to do the job up the way he'd like to. But it looks to me like you'll get all you'll need. Unless you stop Sullivan, and stop him fast.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Duke, get the sleds ready to travel.
Okay, sir.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to stop Sullivan. What's more, I'm going to stop that Mountie, too. I'm tired of running from that redcoat. Every time we get a good thing, he starts nosing around.
Wait a minute. It's suicide to murder a Mountie. Why, the whole force would be out on our skins.
Yeah, don't worry. We've already got an idea. Our first job is to head off Sullivan. Then we'll take care of Preston.
Taking the back trails, Chandler and his men made good time. The wary gunman had been silent during most of their trip, and when Chick returned from scouting late the next night to report he'd seen Sullivan making camp, Chandler questioned him for several minutes. Then, early in the morning, they were on the trail before daybreak.
Listen, Chan, I'd feel a lot better if you'd let me know what you plan to do.
Yeah, you'll see in a few minutes. Ho, you huskies! Ho there!
How do you expect to get down on the trail from here? Guess you expect the dogs to make a jump from this ledge.
See that herd of caribou over there?
Yeah, sure, but what's that got
to
do with...
Pass down there is mighty narrow, isn't it?
Yeah, it's narrow, so what?
So Sullivan will be coming through here in about 10 minutes. There's not a track down there yet, so you... What's wrong?
Hey, there he is now.
Yeah. Wait till he's well into the pass, so we won't be able to turn around in a hurry. Chick, double back quick. Drive over there behind the herd. When you hear my rifle, start firing. You get me?
Sure.
Muss, you huskies! Muss!
Once those bulls start running, there ain't a thing on feet that'll stop them. So, you have a meeting with Preston, huh, Sullivan? The only place you two will ever meet will be on the other side of the grave. Oh, it's getting closer. Are the chicks ready yet? Now.
It was a week later, and on the trail north of Half Mile, where Charlie Sullivan had met his death, Sergeant Preston stood, looking up to the ledge walling the narrow pass.
Len McCall said this was about where it happened, fella. If Sullivan hadn't sent me a letter, I never would have known he was on his way to Half Mile. And evidently someone else knew, too.
The great dog King walked beside the Mountie, sniffing the air curiously. For mixed with the animal scent that came to his nostrils was another scent, the scent of a man. He looked to Preston questioningly, and then ran over the icy crust of the snow to discover the source. A few minutes later, he came on the man, leaning against a rock, his rifle trained on the Mountie, who walked back along the trail.
Preston's dog, huh?
Almost at the speed of light, King lunged at him, tearing the man's arm from the rifle. And as the dog stood, his fur bristling dangerously, he kept the man from retrieving the weapon that had fallen to the snow.
Caribou herd still in the hills, that's it. I'll get the money the same way I got Sullivan. All right, you mutt. Too bad my revolver's in camp.
King caught the threatening tone in the man's voice. And as the man retreated, leaving the rifle behind, the dog waited until he was out of sight, and then went back to his master. Carefully, the Mountie searched the hills and the trails for the signs of a camp. Unaware that the tracks Chandler left in the snow were designed to lead him into a death trap. The next morning, with King leading the dogs, Preston followed the sled tracks of the man who seemed to be playing hide-and-seek with him. The sharpness of the outlines told him he was close to the man he sought.
Well, he's going through the pass, fella. We'll turn here and take the trail through the trees. We'll make better time. With luck, we may be able to head him off.
On, King! On, you huskies!
A short time later, the Mountie sighted the slope, which eased down toward the pass. A herd of peaceful caribou milled around like cattle. Watching them, Preston saw two men standing well behind the herd with rifles resting on their arms. He went toward them, his own rifle in readiness. But King had caught a scent, the scent of a man he recognized. And the dog turned sharply back toward the ledge overlooking the trail.
Oh, you husky. Oh, what? Hey, Duke, it's a Mountie.
Drop those rifles and put up your hands.
And not before I get a shot at you. Oh, my shoulder. They got my shoulder.
At the sound of the rifle shots, the frightened caribou raised their antlered heads and began to run. The two men standing before the Mountie's rifle looked wide-eyed after the herd. And while Chick Kramer put his hand to his wounded shoulder, an expression of horror crossed his face.
Duke, look. Down there in the pass. It's the boss. The caribou will run him down. He won't have a chance.
Sergeant Preston shifted his position. With his gun still trained on his prisoners, he glanced toward the pass. Standing firmly on the ledge where it graduated into a slope was the great dog King, his eyes fixed on the man looking frantically at the frightened animals running toward him, their treacherous antlers lowered, their flying hooves drumming a terrifying message to the man trapped in front of them. Jack Chandler ran from his team toward the ledge, struggling for a foothold, reaching for brush, a twig, an extended rock. Anything that would save him from the sure death running steadily toward him.
I gotta grab that rock. If it'll hold. Well, if I can only grab that rock, I'll be above the antlers.
His fingers closed on the edge of the rock. Jack Chandler raised his eyes to face the bared teeth and menacing growl of the dog who had disarmed him the day before. Like a man hypnotized, he looked into the dog's eyes. Then, in a breathless instant, Jack Chandler disappeared, to be swallowed up in the herd of frightened animals his men had stampeded.
Chandler? When Charlie Sullivan got it that way, I never thought the boss would.
Jack Chandler was responsible for the death of several men. He's beyond the law now, but you're not. You're under arrest, both of you.
The great dog rejoined the group of men, satisfied that the man who had fallen from the ledge would never again make an attempt on the life of his master. But as Duke and Chick moved sullenly toward the Mountie's sled with Preston's gun held on them, neither King nor the policeman knew that both men had but one thought. To escape.
It's a good 2 days' trip to town, so we'll hit the trail now. Travel as far as we can, then make camp. All right. Get the dogs up, King.
That night, as the light of the campfire flickered low, the two outlaws talked quietly.
You know what's waiting for us when we get to town, Duke?
Yeah, sure. But I ain't aiming to stop one of the Mountie's bullets.
This way we stand a chance. We got the dust stashed away, and now it'll only be a two-way split. I tell you, we got everything to gain and nothing to lose.
King raised his head from between his paws as the two outlaws crept from their bedding.
What is it, fella? Quiet.
Get to your sled, Duke. Come on, get out. Let's get out of here.
Apparently, Sergeant Preston dozed, his head low on his chest, oblivious to the persistent tugs from King's teeth pulling at his sleeve. As the sled started and was well away from the camp...
Oh, don't look so disgusted, fella. They've made a getaway. But if my guess is right, they'll head for the spot where they've got their loot hidden. All right, get the dogs up, boy. We're going after them.
With King leading the dogs, the Mountie followed the tracks clearly edged in the snow. It was after daybreak when they arrived at the cabin. Preston pulled his sled into the protection of a rock formation. Meanwhile, inside the cabin...
Hey, Chick, what are you standing at the window for? Come on, give me a hand with this dust.
Yeah, I should have thought of it. The Mountie, he followed us, Duke. Get your rifle. We'll give him a fight just wait till he lifts his head over that rock. Yeah, I think we're going to bag us a Mountie, Duke.
There. Give it to him. He's ready to shoot it out, Chick.
Yes, so are we.
For long, endless minutes, the battle waged. Two men against one, the bullet striking against the rock sheltering Preston. And then, at a word from his master, King went silently through the timber, doubling back toward the cabin. The great dog knew what he had to do. Instinctively, he steeled his body for the impact that was to come. The large window was at the side of the cabin. Duke and Chick were firing from the front of it through the cracks in the logs. King measured the distance, then broke into a run, gathering speed with each long stride, and then the jump. Seconds later, the window smashed at the impact of the dog's body.
Hey, dog, get him, Duke! No!
How can I get him? He don't stay in one place.
All right, drop your guns. You heard me, drop them.
Okay.
Well, I see I'm just in time to take the gold you've collected back to town with me. You're under arrest, both of you. And this time there'll be no escaping. Yes, fella, thanks to your help, the case is closed.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit, and all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They're sent to you each week at the same time. Jack McCarthy speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
Check out the show notes at otrwesterns.com. Send me an email, podcast@otrwesterns.com. Call, leave me a voicemail. I have not had one in a while. I do love getting those. 707-98-OTRDW. Again, that's 707-986-8739. Tomorrow's going to be an episode of Have Gun, Will Travel. Till then, have a great day, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.